That's a gay-ass name for a gay-ass podcast.
Elliot Glazer is back on That's a Gay-Ass Podcast. Do you know you've done this podcast before, Elliot Glazer?
Yes, I do, in its early days.
In its early days, and yes. Now it's many years later, and you're promoting a gorgeous book called The Terrible, yeah. Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Gay. Elliot Glazer, we are Judy's off mic, so I can't wait to, yes, talk about the book, but also tell you about some gossip going on in my life. Number one, though, I sort of want to confront you. The book comes out on August 11th. Tuesday the 11th is the same day I get my tonsils out. Was that on purpose?
Oh my God. Wait, so you can't come to the sign? Oh, you can't come to the reading and signing. Or you can, you just won't speak.
Wait, is it on the 11th itself?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll be able to get out of Cedar Sinai and into, is it, oh, a Barnes, God. Where is it? Barnes and Noble?
It's at Book Soup, actually, in
shout
West Hollywood.
Out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ellie Glazer, yeah. Can I, before we gossip, just tell you how happy I am about you having this big book coming out? It's
Thank
just
you.
Very exciting. And
you
That's
are so
such
kind
a mensch.
Of you.
You're hot
Thank
as hell.
You.
And you've been talking about sex parties on podcasts. So that's why I'm thrilled you're back on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Elliot Glazer, how can I tell you why my day is going well today?
Sure, yeah, please.
Because a guy that I have followed on Twitter for years slid into my DMs to say he's a fan of my work. That's not the
Ooh.
Good part. The
okay.
good part is then he said, "How's your day going?" Which, you know, is a flirty entree. So I'm feeling
that's
great.
That is an entrance. We are nothing if not Neanderthals. And for us, as I mean, I say this all the time. It's like gay guys in particular. It's like we're like big boy, baby boy, like big baby boys, you know,
big boy, and baby boy. It's that's a new Kim Petras song. Yeah.
We are like just big boys. And I think for, you know, as much as we have accomplished and as much as, you know, we have been able to, you know, push progress like at lightning speed, I think among ourselves, it's still so hard to just exist and like make it just relation, like friendships, relationships, sex relationship. Like it's all so hard that like, yes, if somebody asking you how your day is and they're hot and they're on Twitter, it's like, that feels good. That feels good.
I know. We've got big boy, baby boy brains, and I
it's
am
true.
Just... It is true, but it's also like, I feel like us gay guys are always trying to satiate our boy brains in different mm-hmm. ways, sometimes
yes.
in really healthy ways, sometimes in unhealthy ways. Like, I now am starting to really enjoy bragging about the fact that I've not been on the apps now for like 3 months. Mm. And my boy brain, I do think that part of it is healing. I'm sort of fucking mm-hmm. it up in other ways, but like, I don't know. It makes like a how's your day going in the DMs feel so much more exciting because I'm not constantly searching for a D on an app that makes me mostly feel bad.
Well, that's the thing too. It's not even just like you're searching for D. Like it really is a strangely, it's the Wild West in that there are no rules of etiquette established on these apps, other, you know, maybe like don't be racist, but like
right.
other than that, and even that is kind of heavy handed at this point, you know, but even with that being said, it's like they're just kind of like playgrounds for like body focused, super focused attention and rejection. And it doesn't even necessarily have to mean that it manifests in a mean, unkind way. But like that is what we are choosing to do, and I'm just as guilty of it as the next guy. But it's like, wow, we really put ourselves through it with this stuff because we're big baby boys and we want to get off, and it's hard to quell that.
It is hard to quell our big baby boy brains trying to get buff. But I do think this is all proving that the internet was a mistake, but at least the internet gave us a chance to hop on this remote recording for That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Now, you did do the podcast again a few years ago where we asked whose fault is it that you're gay. I do want to ask you the follow-up question before we get into the book, before we get into some horny tales that you've been telling. I might ask ask some theatrical questions, maybe even about some thirst traps you've been posting. And of course, on the Substack side, we will talk about some sex parties you've been talking about, a house arrest affair, a massage that I had yesterday we'll be talking about. But Elliot Glazer, let's get into the follow-up Gay Ass Podcast question for who was your first gay? Elliot Glazer, spill.
So in thinking about the answer to this question, you know, at first I was going to say Nathan Lane, in the sense that I, as a, you know, young theater kid, was a step, you know, getting into it, like getting into it at theater camp and like starting to poke around what theater was. And so for me, at a very, at that young age, which was probably 9 or 10, I was listening to a lot of Guys and Dolls, the reprise or revival. Sorry, I've obviously lost my theater kid brain, but yeah, so it was a lot of Guys and Dolls with Nathan Lane and Faith Prince. And it wasn't necessarily that I knew he was gay. It was just, right, there was a hint of something there. In terms of like gay face, the first person I remember very clearly was Jim J. Bullock.
Say more.
He was on a sitcom, maybe One Day at a Time or something, which I think I was, might have been too young to watch. I just remember, I think he hosted a daytime talk show with Tammy Faye Baker, I think. Wow. And that sounds like a fever dream, especially for way back then. But however I came into contact with Jim J. Bullock, maybe Hollywood Squares or something, I just had that sense. It's like, oh, whatever that is, it's in his face.
No, I'm actually thrilled you're bringing up Jim J. Bullock, because I'm ashamed to say I don't know his lore, but gosh, this Wikipedia page is teeming with this stuff. Yes, he was on Hollywood Squares. Yes, he did a show with Tammy Faye.
Right.
But also, I think most importantly, he was the guest host of a special episode of Super Sloppy Double Dare, in which Mark Summers and announcer Harvey played against each other. And I guess Bullock was the host of that special edition. Also, he was born in Wyoming, which, shocked to hear that gay people come from that state. Hey, Wyoming gays, drop the comment in the chat. Let us know you're here. But then there's an HIV story. Did I just see that too?
I think that's true. I think that's true.
In 1985, he learned that he was HIV positive. He came out with his diagnosis 11 years later. He's a long-time survivor of the virus, and as of 2024, was still healthy due to, in part, antiretroviral drugs. Shout out to medicine. Yes.
Thank you, medicine. Big science.
Final thing I'm learning about the Wikipedia: he was arrested outside of a bar in West Hollywood for possession of crystal meth in 1999.
Oh, well, I mean, listen.
Who among us has
right?
So that's your first like gay face, is what you were saying.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, for sure.
Huge. Very handsome face, by the way. So shout out to Jim J. Bullock. No, I love this, Lawrence, for so many reasons. Jim J. Bullock, you're teaching me new herstory, but also Nathan Lane, I think really speaks to our like gay magnet towards theater as a general rule. Obviously love Nathan Lane for so many films before the producers on Broadway, but when the producers hit, my dad is a huge Mel Brooks person, and I too felt this weird unspoken secret with Nathan Lane, even watching him and not knowing he was an out gay man.
Yeah, and it's just funny to remember him in that sort of asexual way, where I had an inkling. I don't even think I knew I was gay yet, but there was just an inkling of some camaraderie there, some, you know, unspoken shared connection.
Well, you did drop an Easter egg that needs to be gay journalized, which is theater camp. Elliot Glazer, would I know this theater camp you went to?
No, I didn't go to theater camp. I did a play at my summer day camp, which was for, you know, not meant, not just for Jews, but like clearly it was for Jews. And it was a day camp because I was afraid of sleepaway camp. But that's where I auditioned for Fiddler on the Roof, and I got it. And it was like, oh, I can get attention for this. My mezzo soprano is so beguiling, you know.
No, I'm interrupting. Mezzo soprano, yeah. Day camp. You said you booked. That means you booked the role. Oh no, are we two Model the Taylors? Were you Model the Taylor?
Of course.
Of course. This is why we get along. It's actually a miracle we don't hate each other. Two models.
No, roaming, two models, yeah.
Roaming Los Angeles.
Oh my God.
Where was this day camp, geographically speaking?
Long Island, of course.
Of course.
Right in the smack dab in the sort of western middle in Suffolk. It's called Smithtown, which is where I'm from. And it was, yeah, very Jewy. It was called Ivy League, which, so all the campers, all the camps.
So they knew.
And so they knew. All the groups were named after Ivy League colleges.
And what group? Give us one of the Ivy Leagues that you were a part of.
I think I was in Brandeis.
Everything you say about this camp not being officially Jewish, and yet they produced the theatrical production of Fiddler on the Roof. The Ivy you mentioned is Brandeis,
yeah,
which is teeming with us.
Truly, Brandeis. I think there was a Cornell. Of course, there was a Cornell, Northwestern. Like, we didn't even know what we were saying, you know? But yeah, there were those were the groups the kids were on.
I went to high school with a girl who was a good friend of mine. We did like Hebrew school together, high school together, and she went to Brandeis. And let's just say the skirts got longer and longer, child.
No, really?
She turned ortho.
Whoa. Where is she now?
I don't know. I wish her the best. I think she had a lot of kids. Long denim skirts. So really leaned in to the storytelling of the Old Testament. I, you know, support her truth. I'm curious, you know, this actually brings up one of our connections that we will do some of the High Holidays together, which I find to be such a beautiful tradition. However, for the lore on your new book, one of the little lines we get is, in a community built around the chosen family, Elliot can't even get adopted. So what, Elliot? Our Passover dinners meant nothing?
Oh, you know, you gotta write something a little
what? Untrue?
Noisy for the book.
Smack in the face?
I think that really refers more to the need for, like, you know, the sort of rainbow washed idea of chosen family, which inherently, you know, is an incredibly healthy and if not necessary thing for queer people to find. I think for me, it really speaks more to the yearning for basically a big group of gay guys to invite me on vacation. That's all I want. I don't even think I'd want to go. I just want to be invited.
That's so true, Elliot. Oh,
you know
my
what
God.
I mean?
Well,
like,
let's
see those pictures.
Let's play the tape forward, though. We see the pictures. We see the gay guy group trips. The closest I've gotten is I'll go to Palm Springs with Matt and a couple of dear friends of ours. But that's still not a gay group.
That's different to me.
That's
no,
different.
How,
statistically speaking, big gay guy group goes on vacation. Statistically speaking, what percentage of them are like overall positive experiences that they come back closer than they were when they left?
How negative can you go below zero, right? With numbers, I think.
God, you're such
I don't know,
a
you know,
curmudgeon.
I also would say I feel too like that whole world of the sort of big group gays and like circuit party gays and international travel gays, you know, I feel like I don't have access to what, you know, their world. And I'm not saying it as if I'm complaining. What I'm saying is that sort of drama, right? That sort of drama and conflict and the idea that they're not necessarily going and it's a bonding experience. You know, maybe it is, I don't know. But I feel like even though it's very much at arm's distance, if that's the term, arm's length, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's that over there, I still and I feel somewhat left out. I don't think I'd actually enjoy being amid the chaos. And I can even tell you, like, I remember years ago, Todd Masterson, gay fat friend on Instagram.
Yeah,
he's the best. When he had a video go viral, that was a brilliant video where he inserted himself into this rap, like sort of roving video that was for the holidays of just all these gay friends like at their holiday party, and you're just, like, very cinema verite, right? All these gay guys just like hot and just like hanging out, but like, you know, sort of posing for the camera. And Todd inserted himself in being like fat, shirtless, like shoveling popcorn in his mouth. It's the funniest thing, but it's also in its own weird way, very subversive, and just sort of cut through the noise of this, the performance of queer friendship. And he was like, when that happened, he got so many messages from people in that world for no reason, who were just like shit talking the others and like shit talking their friends. And Todd was like, I have no idea why you're sharing this with me. And also, this is like, it's not the language by any means that he speaks about his friends. It's just, he was like, it was just such a surprise that like they had tea to volunteer for no reason.
Right. Well, that's speaking to a few things. Number one, that Todd is hilarious and I'm obsessed with his presence. But number two, it speaks to the thought that if you do get abs and muscles and are invited into that club, that everything is peachy keen, when we have learned firsthand that it's simply not. I think that's why those gay guy group trips can feel somewhat triggering, because just like you're saying about our, like, boy brains, we're all wired to want to be a part of the pack, right? Like, that's like what we are born into this society. And so when you see that, you think, well, of course I want to be invited, I want to be a part of that. But then when you're at that party, I myself have been at the stereotypical WeHo muscle gay party, and it's always way less fun than a party with maybe quote unquote less hot people, but like also according to who. But I don't know. It's there's two things to it, because of course there are those groups that exist that have like actual bonding and amazing trips that I do have real jealousy over. I'm gonna tell you what I've been manifesting for years, which is that I you know, I've been like a pretty struggling broke artist for many years, and I've always felt in my bones that one day I'm gonna make a lot of money, because if I don't, then I'm gonna end it all. However,
of course, what's the point?
My goal manifestation is that when I get like a really delicious paycheck, or like, you know, whatever it is, I'm gonna take a group to Italy, and we're gonna do like a villa moment, and just like actually like really enjoy where we are and live. And I can, you know, we can shit on gay guy group trips, but I'm also been saying for years that that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it, Elliot Glazer. I will.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I'd like to join. That's first and foremost.
Absolutely.
But secondly, I will say too that, like, you know, at the high holidays that we get to spend together with our dear friend Jay Marcus, you know, that is like, that is some of the best times I've ever had, because it's a room full of like different, witty, funny, irreverent, like it's not that far off from a writer's room. It's like we're riffing off of each other, and it's so not, it's not remotely in the proximity of toxic, of backstabby, of it's just, I don't know, it's just a really fun hang. And that is one that I'd certainly go on a group vacation with our friends.
Definitely.
I'm just saying, you just see these like wealthy, you know, displays of excess, and it's like, huh, that's where it's like, yeah, I guess that's their chosen family.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting, I mean, you've talked about even like the It Gets Better campaign, and as you got older, you were like, well, actually it's sure getting better, but there's still a lot that can be improved upon. I do want to give you a huge congratulations on New York Magazine placed the book on their approval matrix. Elliot, that's the gay dream. Middle brow and brilliant.
Middle brow and brilliant. I, you know, it's my first like real book of essays, and I, you know, I, for the book, it's like, it's a comedy book, you know, it's really hopefully very funny. That's the goal, but it's got layers, and there's obviously vulnerability in it. And it's, you know, all about feeling like a gay outcast. But, you know, I really tried to balance the two, because I don't feel like a literary author per se. So to get that up there was like astounding. I couldn't be prouder.
It's so exciting. I was talking about in my with my new therapist the other day about my search for validation, and I think it's
yes.
very nuanced that as a creative person, you have to know you have self-worth outside of jobs and acclaim.
Well, you have to know you can, but it's hard to know you can, that.
But then also like you'll get like hate comments or love comments online and you like can't really take them to heart, but you also do have to pay attention to how things are landing with your work.
Yep.
And so the New York Magazine thing is like, you know, it's we can take it as it is, which is like, sure, it doesn't change who we are, but it's also fucking exciting as hell.
It's a nice feather in the cap.
Wait, speaking of New York Magazine, did you ever read their sex diaries?
I think I had at some point.
On the cut?
Yeah, it's, I think so. Yes,
it's
I
sort
had.
Of what inspired my Substack. Like the way that the podcast has been sort of morphing is that when we talk on Substack, of course, it's like horny and a little bit, you know, as Twitter might call it, fag slop. However, it was inspired because I love in New York Magazine how you can read about some like random lady lawyer who's secretly fucking her trainer behind her husband's back. Like I would read on the subway all of these people's stories and like get either turned on by the gay ones or like really intrigued by the straight ones. And I will ask some of those New York Maggie sex diary ask questions to you over on the other side.
I want to add to that too, that like me as a person, like I can tell you how I've evolved in the sense that when I would read that stuff, my own projection came through frustration and feeling like, why can't I have that? I want that. You know, I guess I'm not good enough. I guess I'm fat or ugly or undesirable. And so a lot of frustration came in terms of yearning for that sort of, I don't know, sexual excitement, that like primitive need and desire by someone else, you know? So it's just so couched in rejection. But yeah, of course I read that stuff. And I should also say to you that the reason that this podcast is so good and has evolved so elegantly is because you have been, I think, that you're able to really have conversations that actually like bridge between like the inevitably, you know, undeniably horny aspect of gay guys, gay stuff, the internet, podcasts, fag Twitter, but also really like, you know, your personality, your the questions you ask, and the variety of guests you have, where you have someone like me who's putting out a book, but then you'll have like OnlyFans or OnlyFans adjacent people. And it's like, yep, I want to know. Like, I want to know both. I want to know a lot. And so you ask, you really cast a wide net. And I think it's really astute.
Thank you. That does, of course, mean a lot from you. It's the whole guest, just podcasting in general is a mind fuck. And I'm always touched when people message me that they want to come on. But I, of course, also feel bad if like I can't have everyone on. And it's so like the way that the podcast has grown with like the types of guests that I've had have just felt just like a, you know, it's the right time, right place for so many people.
Yes.
And it's basically the ones that do the best are the people that like a lot of us follow, but we don't actually know their true behind the scenes.
Their voice, and so, like, their thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, this is going to be a tease. And I normally don't do this because if they cancel, then I'll be fucked. But I don't think he's going to cancel. I'm about to interview somebody who I've been fantasizing about interviewing. Do you follow someone named Dylan Skips?
Oh my God, the jump rope guy.
The jump rope guy.
He is so attractive.
He is so hot.
And he seems so innocent about, like, you have to ask him, like, yeah, I mean, so you know you're hot, but when you act like this is just fascinating about him and the internet in general. He doesn't seem to acknowledge that he's hot, you know, but the content, I don't think people are checking in to learn jump roping tips. It's like, no, I want to see your butt. And
his juicy tits.
He's so handsome and so attractive.
And there's the way that he moves is so sort of effortlessly confident and hot. But like, yeah, it's I consider myself lucky that a lot of these people do say yes, because it's all born out of like what I've been doing since I was a kid, which is like asking basic questions at parties, and I'm thrilled to be able to do it with you here today.
You've tapped in.
Bless you, Elliot Glazer. Listen, if you enjoy this podcast, you're probably horny, or at least consider yourself to be a part of the horny experience. And y'all, I just read a book with a whole bunch of hornery. It is called The Dare by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And if you've listened to the podcast for a while, this is not the first time I've talked about Harley LaRue. I love their work, and this book is just so delicious. It follows a former prom queen who falls for a guy she went to high school with, but it's a guy she would have never expected to go for. There's also gay representation and gay hornery, and I do think you, as a gay-ass podcast listener, would enjoy. I highly recommend you go check out The Dare, if only for the fact that Amazon banned it temporarily for being too sexy. What? So go check out The Dare by Harley LaRue, available now wherever books are sold. Of gay guy stuff, you and I have talked off mic about posting thirst traps online and sort of what that brings up in us. Ramon Christian took some really hot photos of you earlier this year, and you got a lot of well-deserved thirst comments.
Thank you.
Hard-hitting journalistic questions. Did those photos get you laid?
Yes, they did. You know, I've struggled for so long, not just with like body issues and dysmorphia, I think, as so many of us have.
Yeah.
But I think I've also, you know, even like looking at like the pictures of Dylan, it's like I used to get so frustrated at the idea of presenting content as innocent while clearly begging for sexual validation. And at some point I just turned a corner and was like, it doesn't, like, I want to help. My sister helped me with it, where she's like, it's a vacuum, you know, it's a vacuum. And you kind of, to get in it, to thrive in it to a certain degree, you have to speak the language in that vacuum. And it's not necessarily the real you. It's just like the version of you that you're choosing to do to exist in the internet thirst worldly vacuum. So ultimately, I was like, okay, I've been wanting to do this for a while. I feel healthier than I really like the way that I look more than I ever have before.
Yeah.
And so, and I love remote, somebody called it the gay photographer industrial complex. And so, I met with Ramon, and it was like, it was really fun, but genuinely I was like trembling pressing post, because really? It's such a clear, it's just, I don't know. I've never done anything like that where it's just such a clearly sexual, thirsty series of photos. But And then to follow up on that, I've never received that much, those comments or it's wild. It's like, who needs sniffies when these pictures made them their way to people, plenty of straight people in real life. People in real life are like, oh my God, those pictures. And I'm like, yeah, it's all one and the same now. It's really not, there are no barriers between reality and digital reality.
Right. But you and I share,
especially
that,
with thirst traps. Yeah.
We share that neurotic point of view on thirst traps, because I don't know, you know, part of my brain wants to post without abandon, just like, yeah, these are my hairy tits and I like enjoy posting them. But then I also have like not necessarily like a shaky finger when I post, but like a lot of my inner thoughts, saboteur even, are like,
oh yes,
see, you are nothing except a body that can't accomplish anything else except getting some people to click like because you showed your shoulders. But like, I don't think everybody has that, what we have. Where do you think, is it a Jewish thing? What is it?
I do think it's like a Jewish thing, because it's so neurotic, like it's textbook neuroses. So not only do I have those same exact feelings as you, but then I'm also bowled over and sometimes paralyzed into not posting anything because I can't believe the output that other people have. Like, it's so constant, whether it's thirst traps or not. It's like, it's so constant that it feels like, oh, they can do it without abandon and it works to their benefit. But I'm more precious and, of course, just swallowed up in my own neuroses and
yeah.
self-deprecating, you know, issues when it comes to sharing things like that. And the, of course, the irony being that I have a book out that's all about me. There's the ironic
Yeah, but at
part.
Least it's about you somewhat self-hating. And I know there's nuances yeah, beyond true. That. But at least there's, you know, staying true to who you are.
Mm-hmm. Free to be you and me,
if you will.
The real me.
You did reference your sister, and I think it's so interesting to talk to somebody who has a sibling who's also in the entertainment biz, because from my perspective, sure. I'm like the black sheep of my family in like the professional realm. Like, obviously they're very much supportive, love me, etc. But like professionally, my family could know less about Hollywood and the biz.
Of course.
You, on the other hand, are like, I don't know, I somewhat want to compare you to like the Grandes. You are in different ways. Like, while she has, like, the Grandes are like in the pop sphere, you and Alana are like in the like comedy, creating. Mm. Like, you both have this like amazing point of view, but it must be wild to both be doing such an insane career. Is it?
It's so wild. And, you know, our parents are absolutely amazing, but understandably, you know, they're. My dad's from Brooklyn. My mom's from Queens. Like, we grew up in Long Island, pretty middle class. And so I think it's still kind of like mostly a mind fuck for them, as the two of us in our own different ways and together in a lot of times, but in our own different ways have to navigate it. And the crazier part is, like, you know, Alana is pretty massively successful, and I'm a little bit scrappier, kind of writer's rooms to this book, to like, you know, bit parts on shows and stuff. And so I think that's also, at least for me, like, that's, I've had to come to terms with that and how that works and feels. But at the same time, I think it's just kind of a, yeah, it's a unique situation to be in. But at the end of the day, you know, my mom was still like really pushing for Alana to become a nurse for God knows what reason. and for me to become even recently, I'm like, so I'm working on this book coming out. My mom's like, would you ever consider becoming a classroom aide? And I was like, why would I, what? Like it's still just like the boomer mentality will never
trust
go
me.
Away.
When I it was October of 2020, I had been deeply unemployed during the pandemic, getting those government checks and thinking to myself, I need more than this. I am not going to wait to make a living. And so I told my parents that I was going to leave the entertainment industry and I was going to, you know,
did they do cartwheels?
their faces were just like, we understand. And I was like,
yeah,
someone's gonna fight for me to
dreams. They just shot a bazooka into your dreams.
Which, of course, I'm sure in their minds it was like they just want to support what I was saying sure. and thinking. But of course, my self-deprecating insecure ass was like, oh, so you don't care if I live or die? But like, it's, you know, they are
well, maybe, I mean, at least If I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, as I do with my mom in particular, it's like, and maybe I shouldn't give them the benefit of the doubt in this capacity, but at least with my parents, it's like, it would appease their anxiety about someone like you or someone like me in a career that is very unsteady, yeah. that is very unreliable, that is not remotely by the books. And I think, again, at least for my mom, she projects and she's just like, well, you know, maybe a classroom aide. I'm a classroom aide. But that would provide her with, that would calm her anxiety about
me. She might sleep a little better.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
There are two things I want to say, because I actually, as long as we've been friends, I haven't really asked about the like family business of it all with the entertainment. Yeah. And I'm just interested in, I don't know if you read Lena Dunham's book, but hearing her.
Not yet.
So she talks really, really eloquently about her parents witnessing yeah. her success.
Yeah.
And how
Susan
when the...
and Tip, I know them. I'm friendly with Lena. Yeah.
Okay. Obsessed. Well, that's yeah. even more exciting. Because she basically, like, she, you know, says that it was a mind fuck basically to see her success in her 20s reach such high heights. Meanwhile, her parents have been working artists for all of these years, and to see sort of like the shift, the dynamic yeah. shift, was sort of a mindfuck for everybody involved. For you, having this sister who has this very big visibility, living in LA, do you ever have this fear that there are people getting close to you to get close to your sister in any way? Because there's so many social climbers here.
Living in LA, try living anywhere. Sure. I mean, it's really, I mean, that is such a bummer. And it's really helped condition me to sniff out that thing right away. It's already super demeaning, especially when somebody says, oh my God, you're Alana Glazer's brother. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's one way I identify. Sure. I have a name, but okay. You know, but yeah, it's happened as much in New York as it did in LA, as it has in LA. I just can sniff it out very quickly. And, you know, sometimes I could be polite about it, but other times I'm just like, well, you know, I'm not going to respond. It's usually when somebody says, I hope this doesn't make you uncomfortable, but, and then it's like, well, you made me uncomfortable and this is, the conversation has ended, and I don't have to say anything because I know that the person will realize it was pretty shitty to try to climb in a way that hurt my feelings or made me feel less than, because it's very obvious. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand how that would be demeaning.
You're, book coming out is going to be amazing. I'm also looking forward to the next book because inevitably you're going to continue to create these gorgeous essays.
Thank you.
I look forward to reading about the like gay experience of coming out as, you know, a gay guy, Ellie Glazer, being in this industry and finding success, but then also having the identity politics of having a sibling that's
kidding?
It's like so nuanced. There's so many levels to that it's so specific, Elliot.
Can you imagine what I felt like when I saw George just doing my sister on Drag Race? And I'm like,
Oh my God, wait.
Like it is such a strange existence to have gay people, especially gay guys, like really fawn over, and it's not really my sister. It's like a cartoon version of her on TV and in GIFs and stuff that lasts forever. But I could talk for hours about what that feels like, because and thus, of course, I'm a very bad gay, because I sound homophobic saying yes queen, you know. I sound like I'm homophobic, you know. It just, that doesn't roll off my tongue. I'm not, you know, she's the character is so outrageous. So of course, gay guys would flock to that. And I'm sort of like in the background, like I'm actually the one, you know?
Yeah. What's Ellie Glazer's version of yes queen? What sounds natural out of Ellie Glazer's mouth?
I often will say, this feels correct. That feels correct.
Which honestly really does, I think, bring to life the idea of you being a bad gay, because there's no pageantry to this feels correct, but there's also such an Ellie Glazerness to it that in a way is why you're a good gay, is because you're the you gay, Elliot. You're the gay that you are, and that's all that we can be.
That is true.
Come on, after school special.
I do like saying, okay. I love okay. Okay.
Speaking of vocal stims, Jessica Simpson for a minute on Newlyweds did not want to say oh my god, and so she said oh my god without the D, and for too long I would go oh my god, oh my god.
Wait, and you're saying she didn't want to say God because of her religious beliefs
on the television program Newlyweds?
Sure. I'll be honest, I'm more of an Ashley guy. I find her career fascinating.
Well, and by the way, let's shout out the amazing podcast that you did with our friends Greg and Tim. And you mentioned that you, by the way, everyone's called Miss Thing Podcast.
Miss Thing.
It's so good.
Yep. So good.
And Elliot, you told a story about being at the taping of Ashley Simpson lip syncing at SNL, which, my God, you witnessed her story.
I was an intern, and so I witnessed it firsthand. And then I found out that one of my best friends, who I hadn't known yet, was an extra on the show that night. And then another friend was in the audience because, for whatever reason, she was in the audience. So we were all there together, but hadn't known each other yet.
Wow.
But I don't know if you've been keeping up with Ashley, but she announced a new single, and the new single is called like "Grape Is Good" or something. She basically, her new single is "Spawn Con for Grape Popsicles," which is the most Who Weekly thing I could ever describe.
That
but
feels
it's perfect.
Correct.
That feels correct. Ashley Simpson for Great Popsicles. The video is wild. It's her and her daughter, and it looks a little inappropriate, but Ashley looks amazing.
Well, absolutely stunning. I am also very much Team Ashley. I did see her perform at WeHo Pride. I did listen religiously to her album.
Of course.
Her nodes do not give me any agita. I actually enjoy the sound of scraping vocal folds against each other. And I mean that genuinely. I love her music.
Do you remember where you were when you saw her new nose?
Of course I do. I have literally said this on stage that she has the best nose job in the biz.
The best.
I could only deign to wish to get that nose.
Truly just gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Truly gorgeous.
And she looked great before the rhinoplasty, and she looks great after. But God, that doctor.
Truly.
Compliments to the chef.
And also, how does she look? She looks like she hasn't aged a day. It's like, it's almost creepy that she has like full grown kids, because she looks like she was on her reality show, which is my favorite show of all time. The Ashley Simpson Show.
Oh, of course, of course, of course, of course, of course.
You know, as it goes, a TV show documenting somebody creating their first album, which is like, what?
Musicians and her relationship don't... to, was it Ryan Cabrera?
Yeah, who was basically her dad's, like, her gay dad's twink obsession at the time.
Yeah, talk about layered stories. You and Alana Glazer, yes. But then Ashley Simpson and her gay-ass dad, her gay-ass dad.
Her big,
ooh, you know what?
Gay-ass dad.
I would prefer to be in your shoes than a Simpson, no matter if it's a billion-dollar yeah. shoe company. But that's just me.
Yeah.
I do want to do the final podcast question on this main side before we go over to Substack, because these listeners are going to get some good BTS on Ellie Glazer's hornery, but also herstory. Ellie Glazer, you've answered this question before, but the answer can change every single day. So let's find out. If the world was ending and you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
I would have to save Annie Potts. She is just the unspoken hero who has not gotten enough praise, from Ghostbusters to, I think she's on one of the Big Bang spinoffs, to playing the mother-in-law on my favorite forgotten drama, The Fosters, a family drama about two lesbians who foster a house full of kids. And she played one of the mothers, a grandma. She only hits home runs every time.
You're right. So she played Meemaw and Young Sheldon, which, like, I'm thrilled for her to get that paycheck.
Yes.
She's 73 years old, living in
the South.
Yeah, she was born in Nashville. So recently we've gotten so many character actresses that are very much in the now zeitgeist. I'm not saying that she's not current, but I'm saying that Annie Potts has been booking for years.
Yes,
and
she has.
I don't know. Do you think, her credits are also wild. Pretty in Pink, Toy Story in 95.
Yep.
She did Toy Story 5. Yes, Ghostbusters in 84. I mean, that's like some
She's
big
everywhere.
Parts of pop culture that not something that you can just take away from a person's career. She also has always had such great hair. I just want to talk about the like short sort of cunty.
Oh my God, the hair. I love it.
One
and
of the Google searches
silver.
Is, does she wear a wig? Yeah. God, this is such a great answer. And you know what? Annie Potts might need to be someone that I try to get on this podcast. I've tried to get full transparency. I've tried to get some character actresses, and I've like succeeded a bit in the past, but they're hard to get for a gay ass podcast. And one of them is Alana Ubach.
Oh my God, I love her.
There's like a couple of people I like can grapevine that I know between us, and it hasn't happened yet, but like, I'm just trying to manifest, like, getting an Annie Potts type, an Alana Ubach type on this podcast would be
And I'm assuming
so
you saw Coco.
Great. Of course.
Yeah, she's incredible in that. Incredible.
Everything is a hit. Everything is a hit. But listen, Ellie Glazer, speaking of hits, The Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Gay is out Tuesday, August 11th. Will you please tell these listeners, before we go to Substack, where to follow you and how they can get that book?
They can get that book anywhere they shop online. They can also get in touch with indie bookstores. Skylight Books in LA is doing giveaways of signed copies. You can really get it anywhere. And you can just follow me at Elliot Glazer on Instagram or ElliotGlazer.com. The book info's there too. So it's just available everywhere and anywhere. And I hope that your listeners will enjoy it because I imagine it will speak to a lot of them.
I definitely know that it will speak to them. And I'm very excited for these gorgeous listeners to find out why we're all feeling like a bunch of freaks inside.
That's right.
Elliot Glazer, we've linked all that in the description. However, I want to get us into, since we only have a little bit of time on Substack, let's start talking about your herstory. Your first boy kiss, was it at that Jewish, non-Jewish day camp? Was it a college moment? Where did you have your first boy kiss?
That was college. So I had just come out freshman year and then met a boy at, I think, like a video store in the Village. Oh, famously, TLA Video, which was like, I was really trying to do the A-plus student thing of reading about being gay and sort of throwing myself into that world. And that included going to TLA because they had videos that were like A Boy's Life, which was all these like gay anthologies of pretty awful short films. But anyway, I would hang out there and I met a guy who worked there. And so, yeah, that was my first real kiss. And I remember being like, yeah, it was, he was so cute.
Did it take place in the store or was it?
No, it was outside. We were in like Washington Square Park, I think.
That is so pretty magical, actually.
Yeah.
An IRL meet cute. You were at NYU, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So wait, okay. I do, of course, wanted to have monstrous NYU questions, but let's get into formative hookups or stories. Do you have any tales that you would like to share that were either super exciting, surprising, embarrassing, formative in any way?
Good question. I wasn't really getting much action in college until I started dating my first like boyfriend who I'd met on LiveJournal because I couldn't find anybody in real life.
Huge.
But he lived in Jersey. And so, you know, he'd come into the city sometimes. So occasionally we would have my dorm room for that's, you know, but I lost my virginity to him in a parked car in New Jersey.
Wow.
Which was nuts.
Did and you top or bottom in that car?
I bottomed in a small car.
Wow. Honestly, like good work. Cause that's not everyone can say they can do that.
I know. And I remember just being like, it just felt odd. Like it didn't feel good or bad. It was just like, that's odd. And also Frou Frou was playing, which that'll never exit my head. Never. And it wasn't bad, but ultimately, you know, he lived with his family, you know, he wasn't that much older than me. And so we would try desperately to find a place to hook up because if his parents were home, that was weird. Nobody really wanted to do it in a car, you know, if we didn't have to. And so we would sort of putter around suburban New Jersey looking for empty spaces or, you know, but even there, it was just so commercial that we ended up going to one of those disgusting, filthy, like, you know, pay by the hour motels. And the room was just...
For the rest of the interview, head to Substack, linked below, where you will also find chats with Colin Braun, Rich Burns, Christopher Pattison Rosso, Tyler Varvel, Sebastian Dino, Cody Silver, Johnny Sibley, Sam Altizer, and more. It's at substack.com/@EricWills. And I will see you there for a gorgeous, hairy, horny time. I love you. Bye.